acquisition, I think, is the most important part of the whole package. And a lot of people who are agents, brokers, but also just investors forget that you need to have this wheel churning, like, and you need to have a bunch lined up ready to go. It's kind of like when you look at the ships to offload, you know, like at the different ports, you have to keep it going. But the reality is without acquisitions, then you have nothing. If you're going to optimize anything, it's your acquisitions. So if you're thinking about like, where should I be spending my time? This is where it is.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit Podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
Yeah, I'm excited for today's topic. I know we say that all the time, but I think this one's a good one.
We're always excited. We're an excited group. We're talking today about how to build an acquisition machine for your land investing business. So no matter what type of land investing you do, this will actually apply. This is kind of the front end of your land investing business. It's kind of where all the deals start from the acquisition side of things.
But I think like any real estate, there's crossovers on this.
True.
I'm sure
it doesn't have to be just land. You're right.
Right. Like I thought, well, maybe there's something specific, but, and I'm sure there are, but you know what I mean? Like right. This is good for any sort of, so if you kind of already in the real estate mindset.
Yeah. Maybe I should change the title. Maybe it should be about real estate investing, not just land investing, because this all does apply. And when we're talking about the machine, there's kind of the big machine, which is the whole business. You know, that's basically, it starts at the point of like getting leads and ends at the point where you get a wire into your account for the profit that you received on that deal.
We don't talk about that enough. I think a lot of people are like, got under escrow, it's done. Or I got,
I wish,
you know, someone wants to buy it, or I don't know, all these different things. But until that wire hits that account, like, nope, it's all fair game.
We've kind of made that a practice not to really celebrate a completed deal until you actually get that wire. Because we've had circumstances in the past where something has supposedly sold, the buyer has signed loan docs, you know, whatever the case may be. And then something last minute happens and the deal falls apart. And you're
Do I have like 3 minutes for a story?
Sure. Okay. I love stories.
I want to take you back to 2009.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure because it was like right before our youngest was born. So that's, I think it was 2009. So you're doing REOs and you have this one property, you do the pre-listing stuff. I think it was already vacant, so you didn't have to do any sort of like eviction or anything like that. But you get in there, you get it trashed out, you get it cleaned up, you get utilities turned on, you've got the evaluations, everything, right? And then we get it sold. It's under contract or whatever, gets to the end part of escrow. So like it's supposed to close in like, I think it was like 3 days, I don't know, something like that. And all of a sudden a title issue comes back. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
And son of a gun, I'm being very kind with my words, if that still doesn't piss me off to this day. Yeah, it was a title issue. And just like the fact that, because it was a foreclosure, so there was like one little thing. It wasn't like it didn't go right. It was more just like, well, we need this one piece of paper, this one little thing to, it's like they were redoing the whole thing, right? And so that is why I do not celebrate anything, because it was like we were so close. And then all that work was for nothing because it went to another agent when it got relisted.
They were supposed to reassign it to me and then they didn't for some reason. Maybe they didn't like me.
No. I think so. No,
I think it's just automatically got reassigned to someone else. But the crazy thing is, I mean, we were a couple days away and that was supposed to be a $15,000 commission check.
In 2009. Just, and so that would have been even like more in today's, you know what I mean?
And that was, you know, that was a big deal and it just evaporated. Mm-hmm. It's like it just went away. Like the whole deal fell apart. We didn't get any sort of compensation for our work.
Nothing.
And it taught us a big lesson.
Yeah. And you know, and the thing too, though, because I like to burn things to the ground. So not okay. Literally, figuratively.
I didn't know that at least about you, Heather.
Yeah. You know, I was like, I'm done with them. And that was like a stupid thing to do because we got tons of business from them. And it literally is just the luck of the, like, oh, we'll make a note. Right. But someone would have to read the note. Mm-hmm. Give it back to him. And they're just like, okay, who's up for the next listing?
Right.
And
it was an automated, I think, round robin type thing probably. But
yeah. So, and I could say so many different times when that's the case. I see people celebrating wins that are like, okay, well, that is a really cool win, but let's wait till like.
Yeah. Let's wait till it's done.
Across the finish line.
Yeah, one of my pet peeves mm-hmm. is when I see real estate agents, they have a sign on a property and they get it under contract pending. And then the next day I see them put the rider on the sign that says sold. It's just like, I want to tell them it's not sold.
Say
yet.
In escrow or taking backup right. offers or right. I know what they're thinking. Like, oh, everyone's going to be like, I sold this property, so I should sell yours. And I'm like, yeah, but your service is to your current. That's who you really have the obligation to, is that current seller. And it's in their best interest that you not say it's sold until it's actually like right. sold. Put right. in escrow. We yeah, have more. I don't know.
Yeah.
End of story time. Continue on.
We're talking about the machine. Basically, we're talking about the part of the machine that is the acquisition, meaning this is the part of the machine where you're getting the deals under contract and then moving it to the next stage. Certainly not done by any means when you get a property under contract. There's a lot more steps that have to happen, due diligence, the title process, any sort of transaction side of things. And then after you acquire a property, then you actually have to resell it and go through all that stuff. But we're just talking about one little tiny part of the machine, which is the acquisition side of things. So I've got this broken down into a couple different steps that happen within this acquisition thing side of things. And if you don't have your act together in any one of these parts, then it's going to break your machine.
Well, I want to stop too. The acquisition, I think, is the most important part of the whole package, because and a lot of people who are agents, brokers, but also just investors forget that you need to have this wheel churning, like, and you need to have a bunch lined up ready to go. It's kind of like when you look at those, you know, where all like the boats are lined, the ships to offload, you know, like at the different ports.
Yeah.
And you have to have them lined up, because if you have a break, well, then you have your, you know, you're paying all these people. And you're getting no money come in. It's, you have to keep it going. But the reality is, without acquisitions, then you have nothing. I mean, like if you're going to optimize anything, it's your acquisitions. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could optimize your value add. Obviously, that would make sense too, right? But there's only so much like optimization you can do for title or escrow. Right. I mean, you could get a good office, you know, good office you work with, or
yeah.
a good insurance person. But the most success you're going to have is the acquisitions, because and that's into like the valuations and all that stuff too. So if you're thinking about like, where should I be spending my time? This is where it is.
As they say in real estate investing, it's all about the deal, and the more deals, the better deals you can get under contract, the more successful your business will be.
I was like, what do they normally say in real estate? I'm like all waiting on the edge yes. of my seat.
Well, I didn't have anything very witty to say, but really it is all about the deal.
And you actually have to remind me of that. Yeah. No, you got to do that. And also, like we talk about, you need to be getting your mailers out if that's how you're doing it. It's that whole pipeline, right? Yeah. And you can't stop. And as automated as you can possibly make it, the better. If depending on your brain, like mine's all over the place. If I was in charge of that, which I'm not, because my brain's all over the place, I would need to have very like on the 2nd and the 18th of every month, I do these things. And you kind of do that, but you also have more control. So.
Right. Yes. And, you know, to make another analogy, it's kind of like having an amazing fighter jet, you know, that costs, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. But the fuel is the key thing that makes that fighter jet actually move and become effective. And if you don't have any fuel, it's a worthless pile.
You're not going anywhere.
So that's the same thing with your land investing or your real estate investing business. You need the fuel, which in this case is the first item that we're going to talk about, which is lead generation. So leads are kind of the fuel to this acquisition and overall real estate investing machine. And lead generation simply means you've got to get people that are interested in your offer, whatever you're proposing. So in our case, we are offering to buy properties, and we are offering to pay cash and close quickly. Generally, for some of the larger projects that we're doing, we're offering maybe a little bit of a different value proposition. But in most cases, we are looking to buy their property in some form or another, and we need people that actually want to sell us their property. So these are where the leads come in. So generally, lead generation takes a number of different forms. Kind of the first step to that is building a list, for us at least. So we're building a list of potential people that could be interested in selling to us. These are properties that we would likely want to buy. So we're trying to build a really good list of properties that we want to buy in the areas that we want to buy. And we're trying to filter sometimes for possibly some seller motivation as well, some characteristics of the sellers that may make them more apt to want to sell. You know, it could be something like they've owned the property at least 5 years, or maybe they live out of the area or something like that. So we use criteria like that to help narrow down our list sometimes.
So what is your theory on kind of like a broad approach, like throwing a huge net versus being more specific?
That's kind of differences in philosophy. I mean, we kind of do a little bit of both, meaning that when we're breaking into a new area, we're trying to be a little bit more refined now in our list. We're kind of whittling that list down to kind of the people that we feel like would have the most likelihood to sell. Like a lot of times we're doing out of area owners or something like that when we're trying to break into a new area, trying to see if we can build momentum. We do a lot of direct mail, so we're trying to see if we can build a lot of momentum in that area. If it catches and we start building momentum, it seems to work, then we might broaden out our list and do more of a shotgun approach, which is kind of less filtering and more just kind of seeing what's out there. You might get a lower return on that, but it should still be profitable.
So we kind of test the waters a little.
We try to, yes.
Okay. And then once we're like, okay, this has those, the signs that it's good, then we, because I think it's a fine balance between you can get better like value for your money the more you like niche down or you break down your list, right? Or you get more specific. However, you are going to miss some, right? And so it's kind of that like balancing act between is this cost effective to get as many leads as possible? It's kind of a hard thing to sort, right?
Yeah. So when I'm looking at this, I kind of think about it a couple of different ways. Okay. So if we're doing more of a refined approach to our lead generation, we might be finding that we're able to, for every, you know, $1,000, we might get a deal or something like that. Because it's a very refined list, but pretty quickly, that list is going to get kind of burnt out. But if we decide to kind of expand our criteria, each deal may cost us $3,000, mm-hmm. you know? But if we're making $30,000 on each deal,
it's still profitable.
It still works. It still makes sense.
Do you think that scares some people, though? I'm paying $1,000 a lead.
I think it's not a lead. It's
or
per
I'm sorry,
deal.
A purchase, yeah. Right. Okay. Uh-huh. But this isn't like, I mean, you know, there's high ticket, like, course option that like that's a different thing, and I think a lot of people have that kind of set in their brain. Mm-hmm. But do you think that scares people when you say, oh yeah,
especially when you start multiplying out, you're like, okay, well, I've got to send 7,000 letters in order to get one deal. Mm-hmm. You know, that I think that those type of numbers scare some newer investors, because you know, I think they have envisioned in their head that like, oh, I should be able to create a great list and I should be able to get a deal every 500 letters I send out, because 500 letters is a lot. And it is. If you stacked up 500 letters and you licked every one of these envelopes and addressed them and everything, you really realize that that's a lot of different people you're sending stuff to. But when you're looking at something like how the business works on a big scale, you really got to do some bigger volume in order to get a really good influx of leads all the time.
So don't think of it like it's just in a very like specific way. Like think mm-hmm. of it like big picture. And then does the local area have anything to like, do you do things different in different areas?
Yeah, well, certain areas are more responsive than others. So that's kind of like why we try to test a certain area, see if we get momentum. Some areas for unknown reasons are just completely non-responsive. You know, like we might get some leads, but we don't get any deals. And I don't know why. It just happens that way in certain areas. And certain areas are very responsive. You know, we get lots of leads and lots of potential deals happening, all kinds of stuff. So I don't know. I don't know what the psyche is behind that, but
it's my favorite. Like, I don't know.
Screenshot that face.
Exactly. That should be the, what's the one?
Thumbnail.
The thumbnail is like, oh. Yeah. Actually, I just did it too. So do not do that.
Yes. Yeah. Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that you can join our community for free at landconquest.com. Inside, you'll get all the resources, training, and support for building a thriving land flipping business. Once again, that's landconquest.com. All right, enjoy the rest of the show. So you've got the lead generation, building a list, lead generation types. There's lots of different ways to generate leads with a real estate investing business. It could be direct mail like we do. We do a lot of blind offers, meaning we're actually putting an offer price on our offer letter we send out. Neutral is another version of lead generation. So this would be just a general concept of saying, hey, we want to buy your property. Give us a call so we can talk about. That's kind of the thought process behind that. You can also do pay-per-click ads, which we do. Those are the ads on Google that show up when someone types in sell my land fast or sell my land for cash or something like that. We'll show up as one of the sponsored ads. They click through, fill out a form. They go into our system. We're talking to them, see if we can put a deal together.
We've had someone that actually like really likes our bot. You were telling me this. Yeah, Sarah. Like I've been talking to Sarah for like months now.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like.
I was like, Sarah, who's Sarah? But then I realized our you know, our AI assistant.
Yeah.
Assistant is named Sarah.
Uh-huh. I was just,
yeah. And she communicates with our potential seller uh-huh. sometimes by text message and tries to drum up some interest. So.
I just thought that was so funny. You're like, Sarah, like, who am I going to thank for? We don't have a team member named Sarah. We better be careful hiring. No. Yeah. It'll get really, like, are you talking about AI Sarah? Or?
Yeah. Cold calling is another method. You know, this could be used in combination with one of these other types. Say we send out a letter, then we actually call and follow up with those potential leads. SMS or texting, although that's dying off because of all the regulations involved with that these days.
Sorry, did I say that out loud?
Yes. And then on the market deals. These are properties that are listed on the MLS. Sometimes harder to put together deals, but with land, there are opportunities to get some deals that are on the market if you have a good strategy to value add. Maybe take that down the development process in some way. Maybe subdivide it. Do a major subdivision, something like that. So there's potential deals that are on the market that you can do as well.
People forget about those.
Yeah. Okay, so that's lead generation. So lead generation, first kind of stage in the acquisition machine. Then we've also got responding to leads. So this is kind of where Sarah comes in. Someone fills out a form, they immediately get a text from Sarah saying, hey, I know she filled out the form. You know, like, and then starts to qualify those leads, which is kind of the next step. But basically, we use Sarah for the pay-per-click specifically because our AI assistant, because it responds quickly.
That's, you know, such a big deal.
It's called speed the lead.
Uh-huh. And it is so real.
It's so real. You know, think of yourself if you're looking to inquire about a product or service and you call them or you email them and you don't get a response until like 2 days later. I mean, there's probably a low likelihood that you're going to go ahead with that service.
Well, they don't have their stuff together.
But,
or yeah. They're too busy for me. Or
if they respond instantly or get back to you in mm-hmm. a couple minutes, you're hot on this issue and you are, you know, interested in finding out if there's a way to possibly use that service. So it's the same thing with real estate investing.
Yeah, especially since we're sending letters to people who aren't necessarily already thinking of selling. Once you kind of drop that into their brain, then they respond to you. And then if you don't get right back to them, it's like churning, like, I do really want to do this. Well, okay, they didn't get back to me. Who else buys land?
That's right. I got a letter from this other group over here and I'm going to call them.
Right. You know, and so like even you think, oh, let's give them a day, one business day, two. Well, no, that's like way too late.
Yep.
You got to be as quick as possible.
Right away. So responding to leads is very important. This also means not just phone calls. So you can answer the phones yourself. You can hire an answering service. You can have someone on your team doing it. You could let the calls go to voicemail, but as long as you called them back, maybe that would be effective. But you are going to have some people that won't leave the voicemail. And then also responding to emails, text messages and everything as well, because not everyone calls on the phone these days. Some people prefer to just do it by email. Some people prefer to just do it by text. So you have to meet people where they're at.
That's exactly it. Like, make sure that you're offering all those different things. That's a big deal. Like, I prefer email. I don't know. What do you prefer, text?
I love email. Yeah.
Okay, email.
But I, you know, some things I'll call about as well.
Yeah, you don't mind. But me, I would rather like poke my eyeballs out than make a phone call. You know, but then there's some people who are like, we've had that where they don't even fax, they don't email or anything. And you're literally sending them letters back and forth.
Yes. That happens.
You know, and if you're like, if you discount that, you could miss out on a really good deal. So the whole thing about meeting them where they are, give them something that's the most comfortable. The goal is just to get this deal done, right? Right. And that's their goal too at this point. Right. So just make it easy for people.
Next would be qualification and filtering. So this would be, you know, lead qualification. You might hear about that. Essentially, in our business, it's asking some basic questions about the property and the seller to determine if this is actually a lead worth pursuing.
My favorite is, do you own the property?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Now, tell me about the ownership of the property. Is it just you, or is it, you know? So we've had that come up a lot. And, you know, at the beginning when we didn't know what we were doing, we would start, you know, negotiating and get a property under contract and then find out that, yes, they were one of the 16 owners that owned it with all their other cousins.
But they don't even know how to get a hold of them. Can you help them, please? They can't remember their names either.
Exactly. So that's happened. You know, like sometimes, you know, family, they'll inherit a property. There's a bunch of heirs to the property. They don't have contact with each other. And it's impossible to put those deals together. The only time it does work is when you have someone that's kind of the point person for the family that already knows all these people. They've already discussed it. Everyone's on board. you know, and they'll coordinate the signing of everything. But generally, that's a pretty tough thing. So getting back to the qualification, though, you know, we're trying to determine if they are motivated or if they were looking for just retail pricing or above retail pricing or something like that. Then we kind of, you know, move on from those pretty quickly if we get the indication that they're, you know, they're simply just fishing for top dollar or something like that, which is not something that we could do. They're best off hiring a real estate agent, putting it on the market and trying to get retail pricing. And good luck with that. Are there any other potential problems with the property or the situation? We're trying to dig into a little bit and like trying to understand, hey, is there anything about this property that, you know, kind of doesn't jump out at us on the screen that that may be important for us to know to determine if we actually want to buy this property? Like, is it underwater? Is it a former landfill? Or there's some murders on this property? You know, I don't know.
A hog farm.
A hog farm with a hog lagoon.
Yeah. But you know, the whole thing is this a property you want to buy? Here's the deal. Like, even if everything else sounds good, we talk about this all the time. The price is right, but it's, you know, I don't know, a really, really bad location. There's an easement that runs through the whole thing. I don't know. Like, just because it's a good price doesn't mean we want to buy it.
Right.
And sometimes it's just a gut feeling. And that's okay too.
Bunch of tires on the property. Some sort of squatter encampment, you know, like you may not want to do, maybe you didn't want to deal with that. Maybe you wouldn't. I don't know.
There's money in problems.
Yes. If you can solve them. That's right.
100%.
It's worth the time for you to solve them.
But yeah. You need to have the time, you need to have the resources, and you need to have the will and know your own limitations. Like, there's been so many times we've taken on projects because it sounded exciting. We're going to do it. And we're like, why? Mm-hmm. The price was right. But why?
Yes.
And at what price? Because the price is not necessarily at what price, you know?
It's true. At the beginning in this whole business, I was kind of captivated by like, this is so cheap. It's got to be a deal.
Right.
But the problem is, you have to resell it for cheap as well because everyone else realizes it's got some issues too.
Right. So. and then you're waiting for that one perfect person that sees this, you know?
Yeah.
And that's cool. Some people would probably love that. Not me.
Okay. So you've got qualification and filtering. There's a process by, you know, you're getting these responses and you're kind of whittling them down into the properties that you want to buy. The seller situation is right. And potentially it's getting together to the point where you could put a deal together. You're kind of seeing it all come together.
Do you remember when we first started too, that we thought a lead, like if we got a lead and we thought this was a done deal too.
That's right. Yeah. Even if someone signs our offer letter, I was like, yes.
I got five deals today.
Yeah. But then you realize, okay, like they signed this one because it's underwater and we offered way too much for it and, you know, stuff like that.
There is access, but you have to have a helicopter.
Yes. A chopper. I like to call it a chopper.
Yeah, get to the chopper. Or was that from Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, yeah. Get to the chopper.
I know.
Okay, so you've got that qualification and filtering process. The other part of it, and this could come before the qualification and filtering or sort of concurrently, but we're attempting to build a connection with this seller. So it's more than just asking like robotically some questions. We're trying to actually understand their situation, see if we can solve their problem, make a human-to-human connection with people. And then I feel like your success rate is going to go up quite a bit.
Right. Well, everyone has different things. I think a lot of people think, oh, it's all about money, and it's not. It can be about time, you know? Like, for maybe if I'm selling a piece of property and I have decided it needs to be done by the end of the year, I might go down because, like, on the price, right? Because it's like, it's, I need to have it done by the end of the year for, I don't know, I'm using the money for, what am I using the money for? I don't know.
A 25th anniversary vacation.
Okay. That was oddly specific. Okay. You know what I mean? So maybe I wouldn't need top dollar, but maybe it is the money for me, or maybe it is just getting rid of it so I don't have to worry about the property taxes. Or what are some other reasons that people...
They want to buy a car. Or they want to give their family members a really cool Christmas gift. They want to take their family on a European tour, you know, like going a big cruise.
Right. We've heard all these different things. Yeah. It's a hindrance, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you really get to know them and their needs, you can actually make a deal that's mutually beneficial. That's not just the money.
Right.
You know, like you could offer more money, but that wouldn't be the same thing as getting it done by this deadline that they need. Or we've had people who are like, I need you to buy this, but we have people living on it and we mm-hmm. do not want to deal with this. Can you deal with that?
Or they got in a dispute with their neighbor and they don't get along with them or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like those tips, although that can be an issue too.
Right. That can be.
To inherit. But anyhow, but there's all kinds of reasons, and it's trying to understand what problem they need solved and then crafting a way to come together and putting together a deal that would meet their needs.
Right. And we're not talking like that we're angels and like, I mean, this is a, it's Pete's like, no. You were very specific.
I'm not saying the devil. Like, no, but you know, we're a business. We're there to make money and everything like that. And we do our best to solve their problem and make it a win-win situation. We can't always do that. But when we can, we do. And it's all about building that connection. So if you're not really spending effort in building a connection with these sellers, you're going to be leaving a lot on the table, I believe. Are you looking to scale your land flipping business quickly? Well, we're happy to present our new cutting-edge system built specifically for land flippers. Take a look at the Land Conquest Business System today, and you'll gain full access to a customizable pre-made website, CRM, dedicated phone numbers, text automations, 24/7 support, and more. It's basically a business in the box. Go to software.landconquest.com to learn more. Next, we talk about negotiating the deal. So you've built that connection, kind of filtered down the property and the situation. You're like, okay, I want to buy this property. Having a discussion about that price and potentially, you know, what kind of terms you can offer and everything, and actually getting some agreement on that. You might be talking about limitations on the property, kind of being sort of like upfront about that. Like, hey, this property's got some wetlands and some flood zone. I'd love to be able to pay more, but that actually decreases the value of the property. Or A, that the access isn't so great on this thing, you know, so we've got that those limitations to deal with. Whatever those things may be.
You're not telling them something new, by the way.
Right, exactly. You're just being upfront and kind of discussing maybe what those limitations are and seeing if you can come together on that price. So negotiating the deal is kind of the next step of that.
And hopefully at that point, you have some idea if it's going to happen or not. So we negotiate the deal. Yeah. And now what comes next?
Signing the contract. So this is kind of maybe a ceremonial thing at this point. A lot of times you've kind of agreed to a deal in principle. We generally send these contracts over by DocuSign or electronic signature in some way. And then when you send that out, most of the time they just come back signed. Everyone signs it and we're done. We're done with the acquisition process. Sometimes you might have a little bit of pushback on maybe one of the terms or something like that that's showing up in the contract. And at that point, you can discuss that, maybe negotiate something there to put the deal together. Sometimes, as you mentioned, some of our sellers may only want to do this by mail. So sometimes we'll have to send out a FedEx for them with the contract and then they send it back and we go from there. And then sometimes we have people that are savvy that are able to just sign the contract that we sent them in the mail and then they scan it and send it back to us and that's sufficient as well.
Right. And we close everything through escrow and title or attorneys. So this is the information that is used for them to then generate the actual documents that they, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, this is kind of formalizing the deal. Like everyone's on the same page. Hey, here's the price. Here's when we think we can close by. Here are kind of the other things. We're going to inspect the property. We have the right to check it out and do all this kind of stuff. So this is kind of putting the deal on paper rather than just something verbally. And then from there, it kicks off another set of processes within our business. So this is kind of where the acquisition, you know, part of the machine ends. You know, mm-hmm. This is like for our acquisition team,
right,
when they get a property signed and under contract, they've done their job, it moves to the next step. Now, sometimes they get brought back into it. If we discover something about the property where there's an issue, we may ask them to contact the seller and in lieu of us just canceling the deal, if they would be open to, you know, possibly adjusting the price to a point where it makes sense for all sides. So that happens sometimes, but we try to avoid that. We try to do our initial due diligence to understand things, but sometimes things show up in the title report or maybe on site, something that we find. I'd rather try to keep the deal together rather than just, you know, cancel it if there's a price where it would make sense for us.
Yeah, and I think they would too.
Yes.
You know, at least like, how often do you think you just have to completely cancel it?
It happens. Often? There's a lot of times that we find stuff that wasn't really disclosed to us at the beginning.
Can you think of anything?
Title stuff, you know, like sometimes we find out.
Or no clear title.
There's no clear title. We just had one today where it looks like there's access, looks like there's a dirt road on the satellite images, but there's nothing legally establishing that as an easement to the property. So if we can't get that established, you know, if there's no legal access to the property, then we don't proceed with the purchase. You know, sometimes it could be a failed perk test, could be a number of things. Sometimes the broker comes back and says, hey, you know, this area right here is no good. You're going to have a problem selling it. It's not worth what you think it's worth. That happens sometimes too.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times, I always say, like, you're not telling the seller anything they didn't already know, but maybe if this has been passed down, they might actually think they have legal access. Yeah, I have a road. Like, we drive down this road.
Drive down the dirt road every day and there's no problem.
Right. But unfortunately, That's it has to be like legally.
I have to say that sometimes this does happen in land more than homes, because with homes, a lot of times they're financed. You know, like when you're buying and selling properties, the next party finances it. Any sort of these issues get resolved at that point. Plus, if they're building a home, you know, generally they're going to establish that access. Everything like that's going to be good to go before they actually let that home be built. So it's a little more common to have issues in land because it never really gets sort of
there's no permits
outside
a lot of times. Yeah, exactly. You're not bringing anyone that would even
care or know.
No. Yeah. And as long as you think you have a road, why would you question it? I have a road.
That's right.
Like, well, you don't.
Things like that do happen from time to time. One last thing I want to talk about with this acquisition machine that you're building. So here are some main levers. You know, the big things that you can control within this acquisition machine to
this
kind of change
so
your
you.
Results. Yes.
It's an acquisition machine and you have levers. I
yes,
love this.
Levers.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like these big levers that you can pull
this.
To really change
uh-huh.
the results.
I can totally see
so
this.
It's kind of like the big picture.
Is it like
way
a tractor? What's a thing that like a bulldozer for some reason is what I'm imagining.
Okay. Well, I was imagining like a big lever on a machine that you just pull down.
Oh, like just
so,
like a
this really
slot
changes
machine.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Something like that.
Okay.
First of all, more quality leads. So if you put more quality leads into this machine, then you will hopefully get more quality contracts out the other side of it.
You will.
Yes. That's one big lever you can pull. Another one, quicker response to leads. This is one that's often overlooked by a lot of real estate investors. If you can get a quicker response to leads, you're going to be able to get in contact with them. I mean, you're actually going to be able to have a discussion with them. A lot of times, if you are waiting too long to respond to these leads, you may spend weeks trying to get them on the phone again by calling them every single day.
Well, if they're like me and hate to talk on the phone, they have to like build that back up again. They've already used that energy. You don't understand. It has to be refilled. And it's like, how long is this going to take to refill?
And many times you can't even get in contact with the lead again. So quicker response to leads is another big lever. Better connection with the seller. Lead conversion. That's what we call lead conversions. Basically, connecting with this person and trying to understand what their situation is, talking to them like a real human, not just being a robot and talking to them about the numbers of the deal. And
people need to feel heard.
That's right.
Right? There's that connection. Like, you validate their experience. You understand, like, I get you. This is what you need. And this is how I'm trying to make it work.
And then the drive to get things done. So, you know, you kind of have to look at and make it a big priority. Like if your acquisition machine is your big priority, then I guarantee you're going to have better results. So that's another kind of big lever that you can pull on this. So that kind of wraps up how to create your acquisition machine for your real estate investing or land investing business. Next thing we are going to do is we are going to field questions from our Land Conquest community. And if you're not familiar with the Land Conquest community, we'd love to see you over there. You can find it on the school platform, which is, you're getting rid of my papers.
I just thought that was fun. I don't know.
That's fun.
I needed
that's so,
to do
that's
that.
Very
Thank
fun,
you.
Heather. SKOOL.com and then /Land Conquest. You can also go to landconquest.com and there's buttons to join our community from there. But it's a free community. It's almost 5,000 people in the community, depending on when you're listening to this. We might be over 5,000. It's a really helpful community all about land investing. We do lots of free trainings in there and some really good discussions. We've got people funding deals. We've got people putting up wholesale deals in there. Lots of questions being asked. And each week on the podcast, we highlight 4 questions from the community and then answer them here. So if you'd like your question to be featured on the podcast, just ask it in the community and you might get lucky enough to have it picked.
I'm never sure what these questions, like what you're going to throw at me. So I'm just, I brace myself. Jose says, I need help locating natural gas pipeline on property. Hi, everyone. I'm in the process of closing on a property and noticed from aerial views that there's a clearing running through the center. I contacted the owner who informed me that the natural gas pipeline does run through the property. After reviewing the title report, I didn't find any mention of a gas line easement. I've since reached out to the gas company, but they're unwilling to help locate the pipeline without having me fill out an application and schedule a site visit as if it were for a new construction. All I want is to determine where the pipeline runs. Does anyone have any suggestions on how I can find this information? Any help would be greatly appreciated.
Jose, Land ID generally has these overlays in there for pipelines and for electrical lines and things like that. So a lot of times if you turn on that layer on Land ID, if that's what you use, there's other similar type apps that you can use for this as well. It will show the location of it. But what I can tell you from your situation is if you see a clear line across the property, cleared out line, that's where the gas pipeline's at.
I mean, he's not, I have to jump in. You're not a gas line expert.
No.
But from your experience.
Uh-huh. That's exactly where the gas line's at.
Because they have to keep it cleared.
Right. It's probably right down the center of wherever that cleared path is. And then there's an easement on either side of that line. And they have to keep that easement cleared. They cleared it out at one point in order to construct the pipe. And then they actually keep it maintained. So unless there's other easements on the property or something like that, then that's where it's located. So I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about the location of it. I would assume that there is a pipeline there unless it was abandoned for some reason. Should probably be showing up on the title report. Just because it's not showing up on the title report, I would not assume that it's been abandoned or something. I would assume that it's there. And then when you're going to resell the property, just say, hey, there's a gas pipeline here, we think.
And depending on the location, that might be something you don't want to buy.
It affects the value of the property. So normally negatively, it's just a matter of how much. We buy properties all the time with pipelines running through them and with electrical lines, all these types of easements. It's generally just something that needs to be factored into the value of the property.
Yeah, make sure there's enough room to still build and do all those things. I don't think people care as much as they used to. The big issue is going to be like if it's a small property, you know what I mean? Like, and it's taking up this or you cross it, you have to build a driveway across it, you might not be able to, or you probably wouldn't be able to. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, it really depends. Yeah. Some of these large rural properties, it's a lot of them have these things going through them. But if you're talking about something that's suburban and you've got like these big power lines going through your backyard, that's a little different. That makes it harder.
And I guess that's a good reminder that you don't just trust the title report for these things. You should also be looking. That's a good context clue that there might be something else going on. If you see a big graded thing and the seller's like, you know, Clay says, going for my first deal. Sent my second mailer out and the calls are starting to come in and I'm doing my due diligence. Any advice on additional questions to ask the county assessor or local brokers that you didn't think of before?
Basically, you want to look at it from this point of view. Try to determine what this property is going to be used for. So I don't have any clues, context clues here to say, like, is this a large rural property that you're just going to be selling off to someone that's going to just be used for recreation or something like that? Or is this a property that is potentially buildable type property? If you could imagine it as a home site, if you think your end buyer is going to be potentially building a home on here, I would then ask questions that are related to the buildability of that property. So I would try to determine, I would just, you know, contact the planning and zoning department, say stuff like, hey, so I'm buying this property. I want to make sure I can build a house on it. Do you have anything, you know, in the file that potentially restricts this? And what's the process? And kind of just kind of
Them talk.
Yeah, let them talk. Ask open-ended questions. Kind of try to think of yourself as the end buyer. Mm-hmm. And you're going to build a home. Like, what kind of questions would you ask?
They're not going to be able to tell you, like, oh, you can definitely build a house on here. What they'll say is like, well, you're going to need these things done. Do you think there's any, you kind of do that, like, play a little dumb. Like, do you think there's anything that would stop that from happening?
That's
like,
right.
Does anyone have any, like, does anyone run into anything like that stops that from happening? And you get the right one, they'll be like, yeah, oh my gosh, like no one has been able to get any sort of septics done in the past 50 years here because the water level is so high. Or, well, I mean, you do know that it was a dump, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, what?
Do you have a great deal under contract? Well, submit it to partnerwithpete.com. The Partner with Pete program is a deal funding program where we will actually use our funds to complete the purchase of the property. We will do every other step of the process, including the due diligence, the transaction side, the marketing side, and the transaction on the resale side. And when all the dust settles, we will split the profits 50-50. There is no downside for you as an investor, only upside. So once again, go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and let's get it funded. You're trying to pick their brain, trying to understand what that property is and if there's any potential hurdles that you're going to have to, I guess, get over in order to get this property a buildable site. So generally, things like utilities, zoning comes into play. Like, hey, is this property even zoned for a house? You know, or is it, oh, this is only an industrial property. You can't build a house here if you want to. You know, so things like that are kind of important, but just try to view it from your end buyer's shoes and then ask questions accordingly. And one question may lead to many others depending on what their answers would be.
Yeah. And they're knowledgeable, like, and that is their job to give that out.
Yep.
And most of them enjoy their job and they're really smart. So in those areas,
Yep,
if you get the right one.
Yeah, and some are really cool. You know, I've always found that it's better when you're talking to these people, instead of coming at it from the angle like, hey, I'm this land investor that knows anything. I act stupid in some ways when I'm talking to someone that's more knowledgeable about a certain subject. I'm like, hey, you know, you got to help me out here. You know, I don't say you got to help me. I say, can you help me out here? Because I don't, you know, I've never bought a property in your county. I don't know what your rules are. Can you like walk me through what we need? Like,
right.
And just putting it in those contexts, people are going to be generally more open to helping you rather than just calling up and saying, oh, yeah, I'm a big time developer and, you know,
I know everything. You know,
yeah.
But the reality is that everything is so different in every single area that even if you're a big time developer, I think they would know a different area is a different beast. Okay. We're back with Jose. I think it's the same Jose.
Yes.
Okay. Multiple easements, rights of way. Okay. Okay. We're back at this. Hi, everyone. I was expecting to close on this property within the next week or so, but I've just received the title commitment and noticed that there are 7 easements on this property. I was only aware of one, which I thought was for a cell tower and the access road leading to it, with several more easements now, 7 identified. I'm wondering if this could be a potential deal breaker. I've checked the county's IDX, but I haven't been able to confirm the exact locations of these easements. You know, it's over 8-acre property. Any advice on how to proceed would be greatly appreciated. He includes a photo and some other things that I'm sure you've reviewed.
Yeah, I was unclear if this is the same property or not, but I thought that this was kind of another interesting question along these same lines. Now, depending on where you're at, depending what state this is and everything like that, sometimes the title companies will do what they call plotted easements. They'll do that in California here generally, meaning that they'll actually give you a map and they'll, you know, the green line is a utility easement of some sort. The yellow line is a phone line easement, you know, like, so they'll plot that on the maps. You'll see exactly where these easements are and everything. A lot of the states, you won't be able to get that done. So they will probably, if you start asking the title company questions about this, they'll say, well, you're going to have hire a surveyor to figure it out. And unfortunately, that's what you have to do in a lot of the cases. So if you can clearly read and see, you know, like sometimes a lot of these easements show up that they're along the road frontage. You know, it could be utility easements for the water, could be for electricity, could be for gas, could be for phone line. So you might have like 4 different easements that show up that, but it's just right along the road, you know, like only 15 feet into your property or something like
that.
And
it's quite common. Every house on that street has that. So it's not like something weird.
Right. Sometimes you can kind of identify that. Like if you look at the legal description of that easement, it describes the same area and it says 20 feet off the center line of so-and-so road, which runs right in front of the property. Like you can put the clues together and kind of figure that out sometimes. If you can't kind of figure that out by reading these things, then generally you're going to have to contact a local surveyor. Now, when you start contacting a local surveyor, this means that you're going to be spending money. And you don't know how those results are going to come back. Maybe it's going to come back so these easements are crisscrossed all over this property and there's no real usable area on that property. So what happens is that you spend a bunch of money on a surveyor, you're going to have to cancel the deal, and you're not going to get anything out of it. So I wish there was an easy answer to that. You have to kind of look at each situation, see what the potential profit is in this deal. Is it worth rolling the dice on it? Maybe if you find the right surveyor, you can have a little bit of a discussion with them quickly, and they can give you some indication of how much this is going to be and what the likelihood is that it's going to be favorable for you or not.
Feels like this could be an AI program at some point.
I'm sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That they could eat, like someone, a really good surveyor could create something like that. Or
that's smart. Yeah.
Ready for the next one?
Ready for the next one.
So Colby says, subdivide utilities. Are utilities a requirement when looking at a potential subdivide? Will you verify that a well can be drilled if there is no access to rural water? Wasn't sure what the industry standard was when it came to the buyer or seller figuring out utilities.
If we are positioning the property for an end buyer that we think is going to be building on the property, we try to understand if it's a buildable type property before we buy it. If the numbers only work if it's selling it as a buildable property, then we try to determine that before we close on that property. So, you know, we look for electricity, although in some cases that's not even a deal breaker anymore. You can do solar panels and battery backup and all that stuff. We try to, you know, see if it's any sort of issues with wells in the area. Generally, a lot of these areas, it just depends what part of the country you're dealing with, southeast and things like that. Generally, that's not a problem for wells. Southwest, you might have, water is a big issue. So you got to know where you're dealing with and maybe talk to a broker to see if they've got any insight into that. And then, you know, you've also got things like in some areas are served by water service. So obviously, if that's served by a water service, then you're good. Then you also have the waste side of things, which is either a septic or sewer. So you try to see if you've got sewer lines in the area and if you can connect to them. And if not, we will generally do, if it's questionable in that particular area, we will generally do a perk test to kind of ensure that
that we could do a septic there.
And that's kind of for our protection and also to help the marketability of the property after we close on the purchase.
Right. A lesson I learned a long time ago was that just because it's sewer doesn't mean that they have enough room for you to tap into it.
Right.
Like I was like, oh, this is sewer. We don't have to worry about septic. Like, not so fast. How long do you, it's a 7-year wait to be able to hook up, you know, to it. The septic thing, I think, is kind of a no-brainer in the sense that that is way easier to market a property, especially if everyone has septics and you have that perk test approved. That's what, because then they're rolling the dice and the end user doesn't really have the, they're not into, like, they're not trying to get into the land business.
No,
all they want to do is build a house.
Right.
So, you know, if they're like, oh, did it perk? They're like, what? And oh yeah, it did. There's the perk test attached, you know?
Yeah. Septic is one of those things. It's a weird thing because if you have no ability to do anything with the waste on your property, like say a perk test fails and you can't put in a septic system and maybe the area doesn't allow you to do any alternative systems. Like if that doesn't work, then the rest of it doesn't matter.
You can't build on it, right?
It could be a beautiful piece of property in a nice residential area. But if that doesn't work, then none of the other stuff matters.
Yeah, there's no hauling out crap. Right. Like, it has to be taken care of at the source. I couldn't help myself.
You can have an outhouse.
This is a really crappy situation. Like, right, just dig a hole. Like, no. But that's why we don't have, you know, diseases and stuff. That's why we take care of, or we do have diseases. But you know what I mean? Like, these kinds of things that we're...
Yes, it's important.
Yeah, you have to have a way to confine waste. And if you can't perk it and there's no septic, then, you know, you can't do it. It's just not going to, that's also why you're not allowed to bury dead bodies on properties. Like,
you're not?
For the future reference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, I'll keep that in mind.
I know. Maybe California, that's a rule. You know, you
just
do
joking.
That. Yeah. I know. But the thing is, like, they're going to use this clip. If I ever go missing, I'm the evil one in the relationship, not him. So I'm protecting you even from the, I hope I'm not protecting you from the grave. Like, this is getting dark. Thank you for this.
Good place to end it, Heather.
Yeah. You just totally derailed my whole thought process, but it's just a lot of these things that you want to, before you actually send the money, you want to make sure that you have checked everything.
Right. We're talking about all the boxes.
Yes. And I can't stress that enough. Like, I talk about how it's really important to have that, you know, the leads coming in and that whole process, but also vet your properties. You told me about one someone told you about, I don't know, a week or so ago. And I was like, did they already buy it? And you're like, yes. And I'm like, son of a gun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But on the same, the other way, I'll be like, oh my God, did they buy it? Yeah, they've already bought it. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And the fresher you are to this business, you're not expected to know everything.
Right.
And that's why the community is so big and are important, because spend time just read. Everyone asks questions, so there's no dumb questions. We're all learning, right? Even we're still learning.
Oh, yeah. I'm learning every day.
And so it's really good. Like, I think that the lurkers are the smartest because, well, people asking questions are just as smart. But just keep reading it all. You're going to learn. You're going to read between the lines and you're going to learn stuff. And if you don't understand it, then do a Google search on what it is or ask questions. I don't understand what this word means.
And not just reading, Heather. Listening to this podcast.
Yes, absolutely.
We're nearing the 100th episode.
Are we really?
Yeah. So there's a ton of great content that we've got that's on both our YouTube channel, which you can find by just searching for Turning Profit on YouTube, and also on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, or whatever they call it.
He has no idea. He's like, that place.
I listened to it on my iPod. You can find it in the audio version and also watching the video version, which I think is pretty cool as well.
Yeah. And if you have any suggestions for episodes,
leave it in the comments.
Yeah.
Leave it in the comments and Heather will get back to you. Okay. Likely it'll be me that it gets back to you, and we will use it as a potential episode for, you know, the future.
So where can everyone find you? Is like in the community the best place these
days? Yeah, community is the best place. Yep. school.com/landconquest, and that's SKOOL.com.
Sounds good.
Thanks for watching, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, have a good one.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.